This is Jerry Pippin with the UFO Files, and on the line from Pennsylvania we have Stan Gordon, one of my favorite people, a UFO researcher that specializes not only in UFOs, but Bigfoot and a few other things. A lot of things happen in Pennsylvania, don't they, Stan?
Pennsylvania is an area where there's just a lot of reports historically of various type of phenomena, from UFO sightings, Bigfoot reports, reports of other strange creatures, and all types of other anomalies. Historically, we've had literally thousands of events that have happened over the years, and I've been collecting information on those cases since 1959.
Yeah, now, we've talked about that before on the air, and the reason I called you today is Kecksburg is going to be 40 years old right away, huh? I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah, December 9th of 2005 will mark the 40th anniversary of the Kecksburg UFO incident, and I remember it very well. I was 16 years old when it happened that day, and I've been basically pursuing the case ever since that time.
Yeah, and we'll talk about a little bit about the case, but let's talk about the celebration right now. I mean, they're really going all out for the 40th anniversary, aren't they?
Well, actually, yeah, we decided that we thought that this would be something appropriate to have for the community and for a lot of the witnesses who were involved. I've interviewed hundreds of people who have direct or indirect knowledge of the case, and unfortunately, you know, so many have passed away already, and a lot of them are getting up there in years, and their health isn't real good, and this is a good opportunity to try to get these people together and update them on some of the more current information and what's been found out in more recent years about the case.
And you're having quite a few people there.
Yeah, well, right now who's coming in is Bob Gaddy, who was the reporter for the Greensburg Tribune Review, who covered the story at the time and wrote some of the details about what was happening out there, having seen the military, and he himself, which he said later, he was trying to get down into the Woods of City object, but he was prohibited from doing so by the authorities on the scene. And he's talked a lot more about it now than what you heard about, of course, back when it happened in 1965, because he, as a reporter, was assigned to cover what his editor saw was the story of the century. And, of course, the official explanation the next day was that, well, nothing had fallen. Nothing had been found in the woods, even though there was a search conducted, and that people had seen just a bright meteor in the sky. And so, basically, you know, when the paper heard those reports from the government, and that was basically the end of the story, and nobody followed up on it. And I've talked to a number of reporters over the years who all said that they always thought there was something more to the story and they wish they had been able to pursue it back then.
You know, now his newspaper was not very far from Kecksburg, right?
That is correct. That's in Greensburg. Probably around 12 miles or so away from the area where it happened.
Yeah, Kecksburg itself is about 40 miles southeast of Pittsburgh. Is that right?
Kecksburg is located about 40 miles southeast of Pittsburgh in Mount Pleasant Township in Westmoreland County. So it's between Greensburg and the city of Mount Pleasant.
And you live fairly close to Pittsburgh. You live on that side or the other side?
Well, I live in Greensburg as well, so I'm about 12 miles away.
So you're very close to it, and you do remember it.
Oh, I remember the event extremely well. And I can tell you a little bit about that day. I remember it like it happened yesterday. I was 16 when it happened. I already had an interest in UFOs because actually, my interest started when I was 10 years old back in 1959, and my birthday coincidentally is Halloween Eve, October 30th, and that's how I got directly involved, because my parents would give me a new AM radio for a birthday gift on my 10th birthday. And because it was around the Halloween time, on the radios, I was tuning around the channels, they were talking about strange, unusual happenings, ghosts and UFOs and strange creatures, and I became pretty curious, and I was wondering, you know, is there any truth to these reports? Are these people all making the stories up? So I began to make a lot of trips to my local Greensburg library and read all the books they had on the subject. I began to watch the newspapers, began to clip articles out, make scrapbooks. And as time went on, if I saw local stories about a UFO sighting, I called the people on the phone and talked to them about it, began to keep files on those reports. And then when I was 16, the event happened at Kecksburg on December 9th, 65. And I remember the night very well because I was ready to tune into KDK Radio in Pittsburgh. We had a big talk radio show called Contact, and coincidentally, the guest that night was Frank Edwards, who was a reporter who had written some books on flying saucers, UFOs, and he was to talk on that subject. So I was interested in tuning and listening to what he had to say. But the whole show was basically dedicated to all the sightings that had been coming in that afternoon around the greater Pittsburgh area. People have seen this brilliant fireball coming across the sky. Reports that the object may have fallen, it came over Greensburg, may have fallen out in the Kecksburg area, where the police reporters, they had reports of a fire they were investigating. And the show was devoted to the press reports coming in, the news reports coming in, people calling over what they had seen. And that evening, it got much more intriguing. I remember I was running back and forth to the old console TV, trying to watch the TV reports. I remember the late Bill Burns, who was a famous reporter here in Pittsburgh on KDK TV, breaking it with special live reports that the military was now arriving in the Kecksburg area. And the area was being cordoned off to search for an unidentified flying object that had fallen into the woods. And it was just an interesting evening, running back and forth, listening to all the news reports of what was going on. And then the next day, it was a major news story in all the local papers. So it made the local papers as well as the national news wires as well. And our local paper, the Greensburg Tribune Review, had it on the front page, unidentified flying object falls near Kecksburg, Army ropes off area. That was in the first edition of the paper. The second edition of the paper, the city edition, had several other reports. For example, unidentified flying object reports such as a probe near Kecksburg. And then there was another report in there that really caught my eye, because it's something that I don't think a lot of people expected. What it said was that searchers failed to find the object. And the report went on to indicate that, yes, indeed, there was a search of the area. The authorities had searched. The military was involved, but nothing was found. And that officially people seen a bright meteor in the sky. End of story. And that is officially how it remains today. But, you know, in the past 40 years, I've interviewed hundreds of people. And a lot of these people were people who did not come to me. In various cases, people would call me with information that a relative, a friend, a neighbor had been involved. We would follow up on them, try to interview the people. Sometimes we get anonymous tips. But it was so intriguing over the years to see how the pieces of the puzzle went together. Because even today, the majority of witnesses don't even know each other. A lot of people have gone public. Many, many of them have still remained anonymous for different reasons. And back then, of course, back in 65, now we have already lost a lot of key witnesses, but many of the witnesses back then were children, teenagers, young adults, and many of these people grew up to be very professional, from all walks of life, from law enforcement people, teachers, executives, all kinds of people, who are very credible, have no reason to make up their story. And it was so amazing how over the years, people have little details that were not widely known, or details that I would keep quiet about, so other people could verify that information. It was just incredible how the pieces of the puzzle fit together.
You know, it's amazing that the KDKA would break into their regular network programming. I mean, it was a big story.
It was a big local story. And what made the story even more intriguing was the fact that you had hundreds of people who went out to the site that night as the reports were coming in. And as reports began to circulate from the media around Pittsburgh that this object reportedly fell in this small rural community out in Westmoreland County, people began to descend from all over this part of the state, not just local people. People came from Pittsburgh and western Pennsylvania to see what was going on. And I don't know if you've ever seen, now if you go to my website, there's a lot of information on there.
Yeah, let's give our website for our radio listeners here. We have a link to it on the website.
It's www.stangordon.com.
That's pretty easy to remember. You got all kinds of interesting things there.
Yeah, well, not just on UFOs, but on Bigfoot sightings,
right,
bird reports, strange creatures, all kind of phenomena that I've been looking into even very recently.
Yeah, we'll get into some of that before we go, but on Kecksburg, I remember the first interview we did with you about it, that scream coming from the woods. Have you found out any more about that?
Okay, well, there's so many aspects of the case. It's probably what we ought to do, just for those people who aren't familiar with the case, give just a quick scenario of what happened.
Okay.
And because it took so many years to find the patterns to what people reported. So now we know a lot more, and there still remain many unanswered questions, but we have a very good general scenario of what happened that day. Okay, so it's late afternoon. There are multiple reports of this brilliant fiery object from the tip of Ontario, from Michigan, Indiana, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. About 4:47 p.m., it's just getting dark. It's almost dark, late afternoon. There's multitudes of sightings over the greater Pittsburgh area, and that's where the radio stations, TV stations, the newspapers being overwhelmed with callers calling in about seeing this fiery object, which some people thought was an aircraft on fire and sky or exploded, something along that line. And what we now know is that this object continued to move roughly eastward into Westmoreland County, moved over to the city of Greensburg, moved out Route 30 east of the city, and then it made a turn down towards the south. And it was seen sequentially by people in these little rural communities such as Marguerite and Norvell, south of Mammoth, and it continued over towards the mountains of Laurelville. Now, there's other witnesses over by Laurelville in those areas that are watching this thing, and it seemed to hesitate and it turned back and began to track back towards Kecksburg, where it turned down and went down into the woods. Now, one witness was near Norvell. He and his buddy were playing out there. Very credible witness. He was a young fellow at the time. Very detailed account. He remembers very well because it was stuck in his mind what he saw was so unusual. They had heard this high-pitched hissing sound coming in the distance away, and they saw this thing slowly approaching their direction, coming directly over towards them. And he said it passed them more about 200 feet overhead. And he said it looked like an acorn-shaped object, kind of a brownish-grayish color with different color flame, and like a vapor around it. And it was making this hissing sound. And he said the reason he thought so well is because it was moving so slowly. He said it was like an aircraft on approach to an airport. And he said it kept moving towards the south, out towards Laurelville. And again, other people described the same thing, very similar. And as it went down into the woods, those people saw it go down, say, it was not a high-velocity crash. It did not come in at a high rate of speed. It appeared as though it was like a controlled descent, like it was a controlled-type landing. And the evidence that Leslie will tell you about later on that was done with a forensic team that the Sci-Fi Channel supported in 2003 to look and search for evidence in the area where it reportedly fell, where they got permission because it was on private property, they came up with some very interesting information. But anyhow, as we go along, in 1987, I had a public display at the local Westmoreland County Mall, which this display, which I had for many years, brought out thousands of people. It was a huge interest in the subject around here. And I didn't have a lot of information on Kecksburg at the time. We had a small display, and I must have been getting a sandwich. One of my associates was there, and a lot of people were walking around. This man and his family walked up, and one of my associates was talking to another person about the Kecksburg case, and this guy, you know, kind of excused me, but are you talking about that incident out there in Kecksburg? They said, yes. He said, well, I was one of the members of the first search team that found the object. Well, of course, his eyes went up, and he immediately got a hold of me, and he pulled the guy over to the side. And that fellow later turned out to be Jim Romanski, who kept confidential, kept anonymous for a number of years until we did the Unsolved Mystery Show in 1990. And, you know, he told us...
Now, what was he, in the National Guard or something?
He was a volunteer fireman. That he was not from Kecksburg. He was from another one of the local fire departments who had been called out to come into that area to search for a possible downed aircraft. Okay? That's how a lot of reports came in of a possible downed aircraft in the area. So he came in as a part of that search team, and they were walking around in the woods. He didn't know the area. He didn't live there. And he remembered certain details, so they put him in the trucks, and they dropped him off, and they walked through different areas, remembered certain landmarks. And anyhow, as I talked to him, and he gave me a lot of details, he did verify that he would go out with us to the area. Well, we told him absolutely nothing. He walked around out in this area, which is a very large wooded area. And it took him about 45 minutes or so, and he said, you know what, guys, I think we're right on the spot. Now, that was so interesting because long before we even knew about him, we had been searching that area in the 1980s, and we came across what appeared to be a pattern of tree damage, possibly like a trajectory where something came in, there were trees knocked down in the same direction, there were trees with the tops broken out, others with a damage, it seemed to be a definite pattern, and we got a pretty good estimate of where we felt that if something did come down and damage these trees, where would it come down? It was right in that immediate area. What do we figure that it would come down? Now, what makes the story even more interesting is that was in 1987. And a year later, we received a tip that there was another local man who had also gone down there moments after the object fell and had seen the object in the woods, but he never reported to it. And we followed up, contacted him, he verified the story, and he did say, yes, I'll go down and show you where it was. So that ended up being Bill Bullybush, who lived at Mammoth, very close to there. He thought if they'd come across the sky, thought going down over the hill, but he knew the area, so he went to the highest point. And that road has been now called Meteor Road because of the event. And you can see all over the whole geography, the whole area around Kecksburg. And he went up there that afternoon, moments after it fell, and he saw like a blue flashing light, like a blue electrical arcing, like sparklers down in the woods, which he knew there shouldn't be any lights down there. Just about dark, he had a flashlight, and he walked down to the area. He knew it fairly well because he hunted down there. And he took us down from a different perspective altogether than Jim Romanski did. And he took me down, he took us down, and he went over and he said, this is the tree I stood behind watching this thing, and he pointed to exactly the same spot that Jim Romanski had taken us to the year before. Now, these guys didn't even meet each other until one night during the Unsolved Mysteries shooting in 1990, they met each other. And there's another witness, John Hayes. He was a young boy. He had a number of siblings, and they were renting a small little farmhouse very close to the impact site. And it was at their home that the family told us that military people were coming in, guys that men in suits were coming in using the phone, and they would huddle in little groups and talk about different things. And he said at one point he heard a conversation that NASA would be arriving soon. He said it wasn't long after that that there was a knock on the door. He looked out, and there were several fellows there in white coveralls, and one had a NASA patch on. And so the story is so interesting. What Jim Romanski said, Jim has been a machinist most of his life. He was a teenager at the time, and he gives a very detailed account of being a part of the search team, hearing on the radio that another search team had found the crash site where the thing came down. And they were, of course, assuming it was an aircraft that had come down. So he went over with the team, and he said he stood right on the embankment, only several feet away from this thing. None of them touched it because they soon realized that whatever this was like anything they had ever seen before. And Jim described it as approximately 10 to 12 feet long, about 8 to 10 feet in diameter, semi-buried in the ground, and big enough for man to stand up inside of. But he described it, he said, the best way to describe it is it looked like somebody took liquid that's kind of an off-gold bronze color, an odd off-gold color, and he said it looked like somebody poured liquid metal into an acorn-shaped mold. And he said on the bottom of the acorn was like a raised up area rim, and on that rim were these unusual markings that he said looked more like symbols than writing. Years of going to the library and looking up ancient writings, whatever, he said ancient Egyptian hieroglyphics was the closest. Now, interestingly, because of Jim Romanski's background, he's somewhat familiar with Cyrillic, or the Russian language. And
and that was one of the official explanations at one time.
A Venus, right, a Venus probe, which...
It was a Russian capsule.
Right, and he was certain that was not what it was.
Mm-hmm.
Because she has some updated information on that as well. So anyhow, as Jim Romanski's down there with a small group, he said, two men in trench coats come out of the woods. And these men look very stern, and they basically said, get out of here right now, the series quarantine. And right behind them are military personnel. And he said, they're coming down out of the woods behind these two fellows in trench coats. And he said, they were so close, they were shining their flashlights on each other. So when Romanski and the others went back into Kecksburg, they had to walk back into the area. He said they went back to the Kecksburg fire station, and he said there was military all over the place, which later other people confirmed that. And so it's a very, very interesting story. Since that time, we have located several other people who claim to have seen the object down in the woods.
Stan, we could talk for hours, and we have before, on the whole incident about the crash scene, and we'll get back to it, but I think we really need to talk about who else is going to be there for the celebration.
You mentioned Robert Gatty, who was reporting the tribute. He's coming in. Larry Lansman, which is the Sci-Fi Channel's Director of Special Projects, and he's going to talk about the Sci-Fi Channel's unprecedented, what they call the UFO advocacy initiative, that they supported the investigation of the Kecksburg case, and which was conducted by the Coalition of Freedom of Information. And as you know, the Sci-Fi Channel produced two TV documentaries on that event in 2003. And one of those will be publicly shown after the speakers on that day in Kecksburg on December 10th.
You're going to be doing an illustrated talk there too, right?
That's correct. Leslie Kane, who's a journalist, and she also was the Director of Investigations for the Coalition for Freedom of Information. She will be there speaking as well. She did a lot of the investigation on the case while the Sci-Fi Channel was supporting the research. And she's going to be talking about the forensic evidence discovered at the crash site, and also information that she obtained from a renowned expert that the Keksberg object appears not to have been a Soviet satellite, anything man-made that came down that day. And also, she's going to talk about the fact that she located some of the Air Force personnel who were actually involved in the search for the object in Keksberg. So it's going to be very intriguing. And also, one other person that's coming who has not publicly talked before except at the press conference they had in Washington is attorney Lee Helfrich. Lee Helfrich is an attorney who is the person that filed the lawsuit with NASA concerning the case in 2003, and she's going to talk about the current status of that lawsuit as well.
And where does this attorney live?
She's in Washington, D.C.
Okay. And so people are making a special effort to get there.
Well, I do want to express one thing. We have no idea how many people are going to show up, and as we've been stressing everywhere, there is limited seating and availability. It's a fairly large meeting hall, like for weddings and whatever, so we have no idea how many people are coming in, so we're making everybody aware it's very limited, you know, capacity, so we don't know how many are going to show up.
Yeah, they're calling this the Keksberg Volunteer Fire Department and UFO Festival?
Well, that's something completely different. Actually, this is something that's brand new as well. The fire department in Keksberg, and as you're probably aware, some of the former firemen, and unfortunately many of these gentlemen are now deceased, were Keksberg firemen, some who actually took part in the activities of the search that night, or helping to block off the roads around the area that night as this was all taking place. So some of these firemen, you know, they have relatives who are now in the fire department. A few of them still exist, are still around. But the fire department themselves have organized what they call the Keksberg Volunteer Fire Department UFO and Festival Committee. And they have the model of the acorn-shaped object that Unsolved Mysteries made in 1990 for the show gave to them. And recently they had to take it down because it was getting a lot of moisture from the different elements outside. And they're repairing it right now. And they're going to make it into more of a permanent monument with a plaque and all. So that's hoping to be up by the 10th. And they're also going to be selling like Keksberg t-shirts and other memorabilia.
Are they doing this the same day?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So people in that area within driving distance should plan on getting over there.
Yeah, it should be something very interesting to see. And there will be a lot of interesting information. And again, the Sci-Fi Channel, after the speakers will be for public viewing, they will be showing their TV documentary, Keksberg UFO New Evidence, and it will be shown there in the hall as well.
You know, you've done a lot of investigating. That arm coming out of the structure and closing the door or something, did you ever get that verified that more than one person saw that or anything?
Well, that's a whole different story, and it's a very controversial part of it. And, you know, it takes a long time to really get into this type of thing. We haven't talked about it a lot, but it's intriguing. What this comes down, first of all, let me say this. This is not like Roswell. We've never had any confirmed reports of any bodies, human or otherwise, found at the scene. There have been some rumors circulating for quite a while that allegedly that there were bodies found. We've never seen any evidence.
If I remember correctly, a truck driver or somebody saw this thing.
This is a whole different scenario. This is something different. When I was producing my documentary film called Keksberg the Untold Story, which, by the way, you can get through my website, and it's on DVD now as well. In fact, we won the 1998 EBE Film Award for the documentary on the Keksberg case. And there's a lot of information on there that you're probably not going to see anywhere else. But anyhow, when I went out to interview this gentleman named Myron. Myron is a retired truck driver. When I went to interview him, I believe it was 1996 for that presentation, he was in very poor health. He was on oxygen, didn't look very well, was not a good situation there. And we had already talked, of course, about the fact that he had, and I should tell the story so you know a little bit about it. In 1990, when Unsolved Mysteries did their TV show, there was a huge response from around the country from people who had information. A lot of these were people who had lived in this area and moved away. People around the country supposedly had information. There were alleged military sources, anonymous tips, just a lot of very intriguing information, some which appeared to be very interesting, and we followed up on a lot of it as best we could. But anyhow, this gentleman named Myron called me, and he said, I guess I'm allowed to talk to you about it now since it's on television. So he goes on to tell me how he worked for this large supply house in Ohio at the time, and how this was just a few days after the object fell in Pennsylvania. And he had an association with that, too, because he is a truck driver. He had a lot of friends who were truck drivers, and he remembered all the talk on the CB radio. Other truck drivers were talking about seeing this army, this military convoy coming in from Pennsylvania with this tarpaulin-covered object coming in to outside of Columbus to Lockport Air Force Base.
And now, there is evidence there in Kecksburg. A lot of people saw that trailer with the thing on it, right?
Various people saw this large military flatbed tractor trailer with a tarpaulin-covered object going at around 1 o'clock in the morning. Okay? Now, I should go back and fill another part of the story in. Before the Unsolved Mystery Show aired, a gentleman contacted me who I checked his background out. He has a very good background. I don't want to go into too deep because I don't want to be identified at this point. But he was an Air Force security policeman who was stationed at Lockbourne Air Force Base outside of Columbus, Ohio. He told me he was part of the security team that guarded the object when it came in during the early morning hours of December 10th at the Lockbourne Air Force Base. Another person has also now verified this account. Anyhow, he told me that they brought object in on the flatbed truck. They backed it into a hangar. There was a perimeter set up, and they were given a shoot to kill order to anybody that approached the thing without proper identification. He said the security at the base at the time was even higher than when President Kennedy had visited the base one other time before that. So anyhow, he had only been there a while. He was called off of that duty, but he heard it had gone on to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base near Dayton, Ohio. Now we're talking about Myron again, because a truck driver. Myron told me that this Navy officer came into this Ohio supply house with a special type of brick. It was a glazed engineering brick. They ordered this large amount of brick to be taken to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. Now, there was another witness, another truck driver, who initially didn't want to get involved, didn't want to talk about it, but later he did. He was interviewed to verify the fact that he himself had taken the first load of bricks to Wright-Patterson the day before Myron did, where he and Myron went the second day together. And he said when he got there, it was the flatbed with the tarpaulin-covered object was parked outside of this building, this big warehouse building. He described it as looking like a big Liberty Bell, which would be very similar to an acorn-shaped description. And then the next day, this gentleman and Myron went back with both of them with loads of brick to unload at Wright-Patterson. And they were told to stay with your vehicle, don't be looking around, just do your job. Well, Myron was curious because there were men in white coveralls and sidearms and protective gear going in and out of this warehouse building. And they were periodically changing their outer clothing. And he was wondering, what's going on there? So when he thought it was clear, he went over and looked inside the building. He said there was scaffolding inside, and up on the scaffolding was this large, bell-shaped object. Very similar. He could see strange markings at the bottom. They had ladders going up to it, and these guys were apparently trying to open this thing up. And he got this piece of information. Apparently, they must have thought that if he was there, he must have been cleared to be there. And then they soon realized that he wasn't, and basically he told me he was threatened and told not to talk about it. In fact, basically they told him that if he ever talked about it, they're going to throw him in jail and throw away the keys, but in 20 years, this would all be public knowledge. That's what they told him in 65. And of course, that never happened. So anyhow, as the part of the story goes on now, they're interviewing him in 1996 for the program, and he tells us all about this, and then he tells us something else, which we are all shocked. He says there was something else. He said, I have got into this before. There was something else in the warehouse building. He said the lighting wasn't real good, but he said there was a table in there and where the object was in the same building. And he said he could see what appeared to be a body, a small body that was covered over. And he said all he could see, he said he estimated this thing was maybe about 80 pounds, about 4.5 to 5 feet tall. And all he could see was a left hand sticking out from under the cover. And it looks, I mean, you can see like three index fingers, and he said the skin from that distance looks somewhat lizard-like. And I kept trying to get him to exaggerate and change his story. He said, that's all I saw, that's all I could see.
Wow.
And, well, what makes the story even a little more interesting now is that in 2002, and you know, I'm reluctant to even talk about these things, but it's a part of the story, and back in 2002, as the media was beginning to give some serious attention to the sci-fi investigation and the CFI investigation, what was going on, a number of local people began to come out of the woodwork again. Some more came out and were willing to talk about their involvement and what they saw, even though a lot of them still have to remain anonymous. But now that there was a serious investigation, they thought, well, now it's time to come forward. Well, there was a name on the list that right away drew my attention, because this name came up like 13 years before that. We'll call this gentleman Joel, retired fellow now. And back then, we had got a tip that he had been down in the woods hiding, had seen a lot of the military recovery operation with the object. And he was contacted at the time, and he would not deny it. He just basically said he didn't want to get involved. He was afraid he was getting in trouble with the government if he talked about what he saw, if he wouldn't get involved. So anyhow, his name's on the list for many years later. So I call him, and it was him. And he agreed to meet with me in November 2002. So I met him, and when I went out to the house, the first thing he said was, you know what, sir, he said, I was going to call and cancel it. My wife is very much against me getting involved in this type of thing. My family doesn't want me involved still. And he said, I'd rather just forget about it. And then he began asking questions. Like, he still had the main concern was, would the government come after him if he talked about what he saw? And anyhow, we talked some more, and he said, well, you know, you're here already. I'll tell you some of what's happened. So he gave me a lot of details, and I met with him a number of times after that as well. We had many hours of interviews with him. And basically went on to tell me that how he knew the area, how he and his brother had seen this thing coming across the sky, changing direction, and later they heard it fell down in that general wooded area, and he worked himself down into the woods with his flashlight out. He knew the general area, and he saw in the distance, like other people described, like flashes of like electricity down in the woods, which is what drew him over to where the thing was. And he said he hid down in the woods, and he said as he's hiding down there, he saw various people coming in, including Army and Air Force personnel. He himself had been in the military, so he knew the type of uniforms and what was going on. And he said, he described to me all the activity down there, and some of what he told me was just very interesting, very detailed. He said there was military, Army people down there. He said an Army general jumped onto the top of this metallic object. And he said this officer had some type of a probe, an instrument in his hand that at the distance he was from it, he said, it looked something like a policeman's billy club, but longer. And he said, for whatever reason, the officer struck the object, and that tool bounced out of his hand when he struck it. And he said, and at this point, Joel's facial expressions began to change, and I could hear his voice began to tremble, and I could see he was going to tell me something very uncomfortable. And he said, I swear to God, sir, there was something inside of that thing. And he said, moments after the officer struck that thing, he said, from the front of the object, a hatch opened that swung from the right to the left. And he said, there was like an unusual whirling, hissing sound when it opened up. And he said, all he could see was this real unusually long arm and two fingers that extended out of the hatch. And he said, it seemed like it stretched like elastic. And he said, the hatch opened up. And he said, from his position distance, he said he sure there had to be another arm, and there could have been more fingers, but he couldn't see it from where he was. And he said, seconds later, the hatch closed real hard, like metal on metal, and that was it. And he said, at that point, the general jumped off there, started yelling to the men, and said, something like, we don't have much time, we ain't got much time. And the soldiers began to work all around this thing, and he described in detail how they strapped this thing, and how they winched it over and loaded it onto the flatbed truck down by the woods. They couldn't bring the truck right into the area because of the trees, so they had to winch it over off the side of the field where they hoisted onto the flatbed. And he also described, interestingly, men in suits and hats, like men in dress suits down in the woods, whom he said appeared to be directing the operation. And he, and one thing I'll never forget, he said, I don't understand why there would be politicians down in the woods. He said they looked like politicians at the time, the way they were dressed. And
well, that is interesting. You would think the general would be in charge.
Anyhow, you know, you listen to what Joel has said, you listen to what Byron said, and again, neither one's describing bodies, details, they're just boasting an arm and some fingers. And very intrigued. And then you got to listen to what the person you referred to earlier was Don Sebastian. Now, Don Sebastian is a gentleman who lived about 40 miles away in Johnstown, and he was a teenager. Some of his friends, they heard the radio report, something had fallen, so they traveled a pretty good distance late that night, didn't know the area, found their way into Kecksburg, and then they were stopped by a roadblock of state police and others, and they were told to leave the area. Well, he said, you know what, we came all this distance, we're going to find out what's going on. And there was a girl in the car and her boyfriend, and the girl was crying, she was already upset and afraid, so her and her boyfriend stayed in the car, and Don decided that he was going to try to find his way down to see what was going on. So he hid, and he went past the roadblock, and found his way over into this other side of the woods that other people describe where a lot of military activity was taking place. And he said he came across two military olive green flatbed tractor trailer trucks. And he stood up, he said he couldn't remember if it was the tire or the bumper. And he looked up and over them, and you could look down into the woods. And he said there were soldiers really close to where he was that were armed right in front of him. He said he sure the reason they couldn't see him was because the truck had two big lights on and was shining down in their direction down to the woods, and he probably couldn't see him for the lights in their eyes. And he said, what's so amazing was, he said, I'm standing up there and I'm watching down in the field, and there's about 100 soldiers or so in a single line formation with their rifles at hip level aiming towards the woods. And he said, he's watching this, and all of a sudden as these tremendous loud screams were coming out of the woods, he said it made the hair stand up the back of his neck. And he said he felt that no human could produce that volume of sound like that, the way it traveled. And he said you could see the soldiers reacting to the sound. And he said he heard a second scream, and he said at that point he got out of there. Now, I must tell you, that is the only report we had that we from anybody that heard the scream. Now, but you also got to understand, most of the people are up on the other side of the road, you know, a fairly good distance from where all this activity is taking place. So, you know, Don seems to be very, very responsible, has no reason to make up the story, and that's intriguing. And then you add to Bill Weaver, who's another very competent witness. Bill was a teenager at 65. He was riding with his vehicle when he heard on the radio about something falling in that area, which he lived close by. He found himself over in that same general area, saw various people, saw military presence and other people there. But what Bill described, and other people have described, other also men in white coveralls, like moon suits, being at the scene. But Bill said this big, white-colored box truck pulled up near him. Four men in what he called moon suits got out of the vehicle. They were carrying a box-shaped device. It was about 4 to 5 feet square on a stretcher-like base with four handles, and they carried it down into the ravine, down to where the object had come down. Now, the whole question is, what was that device for? It was too small to put the object in, so did they have knowledge that there was someone or something inside? That's one of the mysteries we may never have any answers for. If these people are credible and they're telling the truth, and I see no reason to doubt their stories, but it's limited information, then we have to wonder, was there someone or something inside of this object, possibly?
You know, with the anniversary coming up and the big celebration, perhaps, Stan, you'll find even more witnesses, even though time is, of course, not an ally anymore.
And there are indeed many people that I know of that still live around the area that I know have information which have never come forward. And well, somebody out there may have that important clue that can solve the case. For example, I'll give you one thing that we're still hoping what will happen. There have been reports for years that there were indeed photographs taken of the object. In fact, it's very well believed that John Murphy, who was the news director of WHJB Radio in Greensburg, who was probably the first reporter on the scene, that he got down into the woods before the military arrived, and he apparently did get pictures. and at least one person who worked at the station said she did see the picture. I talked to another man who in the 70s said he saw black and white pictures that some other family had taken of it, but nobody's ever come forward with a photograph. We've had rumors that people have pictures of military trucks, personnel that were on the scene that night, and if these people have these pictures, they could very much help to close this case.
Now, how would they get a hold of you? You have a phone?
Oh, sure. My 24-hour UFO hotline is area code 724-838-7768. My email address is paufo@westall.com. And, of course, they can reach me through my website, which is dangordon.com.
And, of course, we have a link to that and the email address as well. 40 years after Kecksburg, we're supposed to know the answers in 20 years. Maybe we'll find out someday. What do you think?
Well, not only myself, but more importantly to a lot of the witnesses who were involved, especially some of the primary witnesses who, over the years, went public, took a lot of ridicule, name-calling. These people would like to have closure once and for all. They would like the government to come out and finally say, yes, we did recover something, even if this was something man-made, even if it was a Soviet space device or something secret of the government. It's been 40 years later. Technology has changed so much. Why won't they come out and just show what they've recovered and give closure to the case once and forever?
It's a good question. I got an email one time from you, and you mentioned it several months back, and it said this month alone we've had incidents reported in 48 counties in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, that was actually last year.
Yeah. And what struck me was there seems to be a lot of activity still going on there.
Oh, yes. My most recent report was just 2 days ago. I had a report from several people seeing a glowing something making very large circles in the sky for about 10 minutes. And while I have not been able to reach the one fellow yet, but supposedly he's got some video on his cell phone he took of the object.
What part of Pennsylvania?
This would have been out here in Westmoreland County.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an area along the Chestnut Ridge. Now, the Chestnut Ridge is a mountain range that runs 100 miles long from Preston County, West Virginia, through Westmoreland, Fayette, Indiana County, and southwest Pennsylvania. It's historically a hotbed for all kind of activity. Year after year, we have UFO sightings, Bigfoot sightings, other strange events that have been reported by many different people over this large area. And some of the most intriguing cases probably in history that have been documented in these areas have taken place up there. And every year, including this year, we've had some very intriguing reports come in.
We talked about Bigfoot with you. We could do a show on that alone because you've had quite a few Bigfoot reports over the years, and you've really followed that up.
I've investigated hundreds of Bigfoot sightings. We had that major wave of sightings that we investigated back in 1973, which was the biggest outbreak in history of Bigfoot sightings, which occurred from the summer of 73 into early 1974 over a very widespread area, like 7 counties in western Pennsylvania, and then the east, down in the Pennsylvania Dutch country at the same time. In fact, I'm actually working on a book on it right now because so many people have asked me, you've got to get this information out because it was so intriguing. And that was, as you recall, in 73, was the last national wave of UFO sightings were going on in the country. It was a big year. Well, we had hundreds and hundreds of UFO sightings going on in Pennsylvania all year, and then we had this wave of Bigfoot sightings occur. And again, reluctantly describing some of these events, but very well documented, the fact that in some cases even the state police were involved in the investigation. We had a number of cases very well documented where both UFOs and Bigfoot were seen at the same time and place.
I was going to ask you about that. There seems to be some connection, doesn't there?
Well, we don't know if there's any direct or indirect connection. And, you know, this is very controversial because UFO people don't want to hear about Bigfoot, and the Bigfoot people don't want to hear about UFOs being connected. My position as an investigator is to gather the information, document as best I can, and let people make up their own minds. I don't have the answer to what's going on.
Yeah, I know. I've tried to get you to give an opinion on that, and you really, really just try to be objective.
Exactly. I do not have the answers, but at the same time, we were on, for example, in two of the cases, we were on the scene relatively short time after they occurred. State police involved in two of the cases. Many, many witnesses. In the one case where it was a multiple witness UFO landing where two Bigfoot creatures were seen at the same time, and a state trooper who came up to investigate a short time later found the whole area self-luminescent glowing where the objects had been on the ground. And Dr. Berthold Schwartz, a famous psychiatrist that you may know of, he spent about a week up here investigating that case back in 1973.
And have you personally run across a Bigfoot?
I have never, in all the years, this is now 46 years, I have never seen a UFO. I have never seen a Bigfoot. That's experienced personally. However, I've been out on hundreds and hundreds, and I've been involved in thousands of investigations. One thing that showed up in many of the reports with UFOs, especially the Bigfoot sightings, when these things were close by, the animals, especially dogs, but horses, cattle, dogs in particular, it was so amazing to see normally ferocious dogs paralyzed in fear, would not move, would not bark, sometimes wouldn't even eat right for several days later. So we would get out to these areas and see this quite often. This one particular case on this farm, where this creature had apparently come through there several times, when we got there, something big was ahead of us. You could hear it crashing through the field ahead of us and making this unusual sound, one of a number of sounds that people had reported commonly.
What kind of sound? What kind of sound?
It was like somebody with asthma, like somebody taking...
Heavy breathing, huh?
And we did record that sound, by the way.
Do you have that on your website?
No, I don't. There's many sounds we have, but most of the material I have is not on the website, and there's various reasons for that, too. One of the reasons is because we don't want everybody to be able to have that out, because we want to be able to verify what we have from other sources.
Yeah, I understand. I was just looking for a good show, you know. what's piqued your interest in the last couple of years, mostly? What's happening with you?
We're still having Bigfoot sightings. We're still having very interesting UFO sightings. I don't have my research groups anymore. From 1970 and 1993, I had three volunteer research groups that were probably the most active in the country. And the last group that was very well known was called PASU, the Pennsylvania Association for the Study of the Unexplained. We all did this on our own time and pocket. We had scientists, engineers, and technicians, and law enforcement people, and medical specialists, and we all did this around our jobs. But we responded to the cases quite often, 24 hours a day. So we would have teams quite often were investigated at the scene, sometimes minutes to hours after they occurred. And that's what was so interesting, because that's why we came up with interesting physical evidence. We could document things very quickly. You could see the animal reaction. You could see the physical reaction and the emotional reaction of the witnesses. And there's no way, under these circumstances, that some of these things could be fabricated. But also, I must point out, something I've found since the time I started, and I still indicate today, is that when you properly investigate these reports, whether UFO sightings or other phenomena, while many appear to be strange and unusual on the surface, most turn out to be natural or man-made in origin.
In other words, it doesn't bother you to, in fact, you're probably happy to be able to attribute these sightings to some natural phenomena.
Right, natural, something man-made. Mm-hmm. However, when you eliminate all the IFOs, all the identifiable other phenomena, there still are many hundreds of cases in Pennsylvania alone that have taken place over the years that you cannot dismiss. Something is happening out there that the scientific community needs to look into.
How about reports of physical harm? Anybody ever been injured or...
The Bigfoot?
Yes.
It's nothing common at all. We have heard very few possible accounts, but nothing that we could really say for sure. It's not typical of the creatures. Many of the sightings we've had around here have actually been daylight sightings. Some have been multiple witness sightings, sometimes multiple creature sightings. And in many cases, as the witness has said, if these things wanted to get them, they easily could have. I mean, we've had cases of these things chasing cars, you know, keeping up a car 50 miles an hour. We've had reports of them carrying deer over their shoulders and going through cornfields and going at very huge stride. They cover a long distance very quickly. And, you know, great agility, great strength. And as people said, if they wanted to hurt them, they could easily have done it. They appear to be very curious of human nature, but no cases where anybody that I can think of was actually hurt by one that I can verify.
And as you mentioned, the dogs are usually terrified of them, so there's no pack of dogs attacking them.
No. That's, in most cases, the dogs, when they're close by, they just won't respond. I remember one case up in Ohio Pile where there was an incident with a creature, and the state police had gone up there, and these people had all kind of farm animals. They had, I think, several dogs. And one was a German Shepherd,
big dog.
Wouldn't move. I mean, I remember the trooper saying he tried to pull the dog out of the cage. The dog wouldn't even move.
He wanted to stay where he was.
Yeah.
What do you attribute to the fact we've never found a body of Bigfoot?
Well, that's another entirely different story. And, you know, this is why I'm writing this book on what happened in 73, because of the fact that during this wave, many very unusual things began to show up. You got to remember now, back then, as even today, a lot of our reports came in from the police departments, the news media, and these weren't UFO and Bigfoot people who had interest in this stuff. Most of these were coming from the general public, who were just frightened and wanted some answers as to what was going on. And some very odd things began to show up as we were out in the field investigating, which began to make us wonder what exactly was we were dealing with. And I'll just briefly give you one case that was very well documented. February 6, 1974. This happened, and you may remember this. Back in February of 1974, we had a nationwide trucker strike, and there was gas rationing going on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So this was just the way we couldn't get up until the next morning because we couldn't get gas. Here's one of these intriguing stories. Here's a woman, lived in the country all her life, not afraid of anything, lived in a little cabin up top of the mountain. Like there was something going on outside by her garbage, by her porch, actually. There had been some wild dogs up there. I thought these dogs were back. So she loaded her double-barrel shotgun. She was going to shoot over their head, scare them away. She opens up the porch. She turns on the porch light, opens up the door, and standing about 6 or 7 feet away from her is this big, hairy creature. I'll never forget how she described it. She never called it Bigfoot. She said it was a great big hairy ape. It was about 7 or 8 foot tall with its arms straight up over its head. And she thought it was going to lunge on her, so she fired right into it with her shotgun. Now, we found the pellet the next morning in the tree, by the way. She said all of a sudden there's this bright flash of light, like somebody took a picture, and it disappeared right in front of her. It was gone. Now, there's more to the story. Her son-in-law and family lived in a trailer 100 feet away, and they heard the gunshots. They called her on the phone, asked what's going on. Her son-in-law grabs his pistol and begins to walk up towards the house. He said, 4 or 5 of these hairy things with eyes glowing like coals of fire surrounded him. He starts shooting randomly at him and ran into the house. When they looked out the window, here's this object, like a big Christmas ornament with different lights hovering over the trees at the same time. They called the state police, and at that time, because there was some violence on the highways with a strike going on, there was National Guardsmen and state police patrolling together in Pennsylvania. So a small group of state police and National Guardsmen responded to that site. And when they got up there, of course, it took them a while to get up the top of the mountain. Everything was gone. But that's where there was all these animal reactions. The cats were hiding underneath the bed in the house. The baby in the house, which was normally good at night, was crying all night. The dogs wouldn't respond. The horses were up where they'd never go to feed, and it was just, the trooper said it was just unbelievable. He said, just to see the animal reaction convinced you something very strange happened up there.
Well, Stan, it's always exciting to have you on the air with us, and great stories. Let's go over Kecksburg's anniversary again for our listeners. Tell us the date and the time.
It's going to be December 10th at 1 p.m. at the Kecksburg Fire Department at their social hall in the little village of Kecksburg in western Pennsylvania, outside of Mount Pleasant. I must emphasize, you know, there's limited capacity, limited seating. We have no idea how many people are coming in, but it should be an interesting event. And the firemen, the new UFO Festival Committee, they have some beautiful, I understand, new beautiful Kecksburg t-shirts and caps and some other little memorabilia they're going to be selling about the event. So some people may want to come down just for that.
Well, you know, they can get there early. I guess the festival starts early in the morning there.
Well, it's not, actually, this is not the festival. That's
oh, okay.
Planning for for the future.
Okay, just...
This is just the 40th event in several months.
Okay.
Which is independent, but they're doing their little committee thing as well and showing some of their...
So when they get that TV prop repaired, they're going to have their festival.
They're planning in the future of having some, like a UFO festival, I believe, and other events associated with this down the road.
Well, how difficult is it to find Kecksburg?
It's really not that hard. You know, if you come off the turnpike, it's not that far from New Stamp exit, or if you find a way in the Mount Pleasant, town of Mount Pleasant, a few miles from the town of Mount Pleasant. So it's not that hard to find. It's just some,
and it's about, what, 12, 14 miles from Mount Pleasant?
12 miles from Greensburg.
Okay. So there's places in Greensburg that get something to eat.
Oh, yeah.
And then go on over there.
Right. And Mount Pleasant's a nice little community, which is very close to Kecksburg as well. And if they go to my website, again, there's a lot of information on there about activities associated with the event and, of course, sightings. And that's at stangordon.com. And if they're interested in ordering my documentary film, Kecksburg, The Untold Story, it's available on DVD and VHS, and it can be ordered through PayPal on my website.
Stan, thanks very much, and have a nice anniversary celebration. And if you run across something at breaking, I'm sure you'll let us know.
Thank you very much, and have a good holiday.
Okay, thank you.
Right, goodbye.